Hi, my name's Catherine, and I'm an English language teacher in Canada. And this is Here You Go, a podcast for enthusiastic and ambitious English language students and English language teachers who want to practice listening on the go. You're a busy person, but you're very committed to your English studies or your English language teaching. This podcast is for you if you like learning new things and listening to imperfect, sometimes fast English. As always, I encourage you to listen to the podcast a few times to learn new words and expressions, reflect on the questions asked and the information or ideas shared. But what I really want you to do is to pay special attention to what I call messy English. That's the features of English that are different when we speak them than how we write them on a page. So things like contractions, reductions, pauses, emphasis, word stress, and filler words like, you know what I mean? These are all special features of spoken English, and I want you to try to notice them, and I'll help draw your attention to them. Are you ready? Here we go. I like to cook. I grew up in a family where eating out or ordering in was a rare treat, a luxury. We did only occasionally. We were a family of four kids, and eating together was a priority for my parents, who both worked full-time in demanding jobs. Dinner time was when we all reconnected at the end of each day. My husband grew up in a similar household. We observed our parents cook and host dinner parties with their friends and family, and enjoy both the process of cooking and the pleasures of sharing food and conversation with others. It was never a question that we, too, would prioritize family meals when we had a family. We did. And we both still love to cook. So it's no surprise that we're drawn to TV shows about cooking. And we recently watched the series called Julia, about Julia Child and her role in bringing French cuisine to the United States. Do you know who she is? Do you know why she was such an icon for so many people? There were two scenes in the series that I couldn't help thinking about, and that's the reason I had to share this topic with you today. We'll look at who Julia Child was, what she brought to both American food culture and cuisine, why some people thought she was working against feminist goals, and then her legacy in both the world of cookbook publishing and cooking shows on TV. I went away from my research with an even greater admiration for Julia, and I hope you do too. Are you ready? Here we go. Julia McWilliams was born in California in 1912, the eldest of three children. She grew up in privilege, that is, she grew up with all the privileges or advantages that come with wealth. Her parents were rich. She grew quite tall as well, reaching a very unusual height for a woman of 6'2", about 188 centimeters. From a very young age, she was described as energetic, adventuresome, and athletic, traits that would come in handy later on, as we'll see. When something comes in handy, it's useful. She went to college in Massachusetts and hoped to become a writer. And after graduation, she worked in advertising. Advertising, that's a Z, not an S there. With the onset or the start of World War II, she moved to Washington, D.C., and started working for the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services. She worked in a top-secret capacity, That is, she was involved in spying and ultimately ended up in Sri Lanka, where she met Paul Child. They were married after the war, and Paul's work in the Forest Service sent them to Paris in 1948. The rest, as they say, is history. Like any curious person with a love of good food, Paris was like a paradise to Julia. She and Paul were well off, that is, wealthy. They had no children, and at the time, travel to Europe from North America wasn't something easy or affordable for most people. It wasn't the tourist destination that it is today. It's also important to note that in the post-war period, France was still recovering from years of war. All this to say, these early years meant that France and French food were all very new to someone like Julia, and she lapped it all up. To lap something up is to absorb it, to drink it in readily and happily, like a cat lapping up milk. Before long, Julia was cooking up a storm and loving it. In the TV series, we see that through the diplomatic community, she becomes someone to eat out with and someone people try to get a dinner invitation from to eat at her home. Her reputation for, there's an important preposition, we have a reputation for. Her reputation for being a great cook is starting to have or to get legs, an expression meaning her reputation is developing and has staying power. It will be true for a long time. So someone suggests to her that she see about taking courses at the infamous Cordon Bleu cooking school. Rumor has it she was bored to tears in the beginner class and somehow convinced the school to allow her to take the courses meant for professional chefs. All men, of course. She did, and she excelled, earning the respect of master chef Max Bunyar. It was at this time that she also met the women she would make history with. Simone Beck, called Simca, and Louise Berthol. The three started a cooking school called L'École des Trois Gourmandes, translated as the School of the Three Gourmets, and they hosted classes for other expats, earning a few dollars and lots of experience along the way. But like all fairy tales, there is usually trouble brewing. Back in Washington, J. Edgar Hoover had become the head of the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, and he was a fierce anti-communist who quickly set in motion a slew of internal investigations in government to root out anyone who had or might have once had communist ties, so links or connections to communism. Paul Child was caught up in this, and the Child's time in Europe came to an end. They moved back to the USA, and Paul retired. Julia was devastated to leave Europe because she and Simca were writing a cookbook, what would become Mastering the Art of French Cooking. The cookbook begins with this sentence. This is a book for the servantless American cook who can be unconcerned on occasion with budgets, waistlines, time schedules, children's meals, the parent chauffeur den mother syndrome, or anything else which might interfere with the enjoyment of producing something wonderful to eat. This sentence makes me laugh. Makes me laugh because, to paraphrase, she's basically saying that the cookbook is for normal people who have obligations and financial constraints, but who sometimes want to cook a good meal and enjoy it. Hello, that's everyone I know. And so it's no wonder the cookbook became a bestseller. But not instantaneously. Cookbook publishing was in its infancy. That is, it was only just becoming a genre that publishers, one in particular, would bet on. That means to take a chance on and publish. What helped mastering sell like hotcakes, that is, sell very fast, was another growing medium, television. As the TV series Julia tells it, once the Childs moved back to the U.S., Julia made a guest appearance on a book review show that aired on the local public television station WGBH in Boston. She not only discussed the cookbook, but she also made an omelet on a coffee table with a hot plate. That's a very small warming machine. The positive reactions from viewers to this episode piqued the interest of the station, and thus was born the French Chef TV show. The first episode of the TV series Julia lays some groundwork, or we can say it sets the stage. Julia's book will be published. We learn that it's not selling well or being taken seriously. Her husband is forced into retirement, and she's entering menopause. It feels like they're washed up and without purpose. But then, eureka! Julia is inspired by her appearance on this TV show, and then there's this encouragement of the TV station's assistant producer, a young woman in real life named Ruth Lockwood, and she gets positive feedback from her neighbors and her best friend, Avis DeVoto. So she takes a risk. She writes to the station and proposes her own TV show. While her husband is very proud of her, he's not on board with the TV series. He's not supportive. He thinks TV is a fad. So he discourages her, urging her to continue down the path of cookbook writing, which he sees as more legitimate. We see the limitations imposed by sexism, and yet Julia pushes back and continues to forge her own path. The mixing of fact and fiction in the TV show Julia creates a good story, particularly in highlighting the massive impact these career women had on future women in the workforce and society at large. However, this retelling of the story blurs the lines between what happened and what we imagine in hindsight could have happened. So in the TV series Julia, we watch as Julia recruits her publisher, Judith Jones, to get Paul Child on board with her doing this TV program. There's a line in the show where these two women are talking that resonated with me, now that I'm an older woman too. Julia says, "At this stage in my life, I don't want to feel invisible. I want to feel relevant. I want to be relevant." Together, these two women concoct, they create a plot to convince Julia's husband that the TV show might help sell the cookbook, which is not yet changing how Americans eat. Now, for the record, the cookbook sales tripled once the French Chef TV show took off and was a hit, a success. In episode 7 of season 1 of this TV show, Julia, that I'm telling you about, we get to a climax, a peak where the tensions are finally exposed. And this is where the history of women and work and the legacy of Julia Child really hit me. It's a place where praise and criticism are both on the menu. There's a pun for you, a play on words. That, you know, both praise and criticism are on display. They're offered and delivered. They're on the menu. So while in New York City for an award ceremony for the show, the French Chef, Julia goes to lunch at the infamous French restaurant Lutèce in New York City. It's been closed since 2004. So she goes to lunch with her publishers, Judith Jones, and her boss at the publishing house, Blanche Knopf, another incredible woman. She disparages the TV show. She just thinks it's inane. She's a bit like Paul Child in not recognizing that TV is going to revolutionize culture. And so she, too, urges Julia to keep writing the follow-up cookbook. Now, after lunch, the chef comes out from the kitchen, and Julia compliments him and says it's the best French meal she's had since living in France. He congratulates her and says, oh, so many guests, they come to the restaurant now requesting dishes that she's shown them how to make on her TV show. But then he asks a favor. He says, let's leave the real cooking to the men or I'll be out of a job. La cuisine française is no place for a woman, not even a French one. Ouch. Yeah. Even today, less than a quarter of restaurant chefs are women compared to men. It seems that a restaurant kitchen is still no place for a woman. How can this be? In a few things I read, and a podcast episode I listened to in particular, it was suggested that women are allowed to be good cooks, but only men can be good chefs. Yeah, cooking is in the home, of course, and it's unpaid and invisible to society at large, hence not regarded, so we give that job to women. I personally think there's a lot of truth in this assessment, and I don't like it. So after receiving this punch in the gut, I call it the punch in the gut lunch, a lunch where Julia feels she's been beaten up and attacked emotionally and psychologically. She's then expected to give a speech at the award ceremony, and she does in her jovial, charismatic manner. She makes fun of the very idea of a cooking show. She says, I cook, you watch, and I eat. But then she says it's really a travel show. The TV is a window to the world and food is a passport, a way to access culture and history through the flavors of the food that are unique to each kind of cuisine. Then she says, and again, I'm paraphrasing, not quoting. She says, I don't cook for chefs. I cook for ordinary people and other cooks, mostly women. And I encourage them to see they have horizons far beyond the walls of their kitchen, house, block, or town. The world is your oyster, she says. And if you take the time to cook, to create, you'll feel a sense of accomplishment, of mastery. She continues and finishes with this thought. She says, because I tend to fail, women believe in me, and we go on the journey together with the support of public television and the public. Her agenda from the get-go was not to chain women to the stove, but to free them from boring, everyday, American, pre-packaged, and often tasteless food. Now, after she gives this speech in the television show Julia, I'm not sure it happened in real life, she then has this startling encounter at the award ceremony, a fictionalized, an imagined run-in, an encounter with the famous, trailblazing feminist writer and activist Betty Friedan. They meet, and Julia says, oh, I've got the book. It's the now classic book, Feminine Mystique. But she says to Betty Friedan, I haven't read it yet. The two women share some laughs as professional women. And Friedan explains that women are trapped in the feminine mystique. They're meant to find happiness and fulfillment in housework, marriage, and raising kids, to which Julia asks if it has to be one or the other. You know, are you in the workforce or in the home exclusively? Friedan looks at Julia and says, well, you're not a very good example. To which Julia asks, well, how so? You see, Julia didn't embody the reality that women are trapped. But did she perpetuate this trap? Friedan thinks so. And she argues that Julia's TV show, The French Chef, gives the illusion of mastery, but that the long recipes teach women that the measure of a good wife is that she can do all that Julia does on top of everything else, and that's exhausting. I can see the problem as Friedan presents it. But was she right? I'm not so sure. You know, today I can name a dozen women cooks who are TV celebrities. My bookshelf brims with cookbooks that offer recipes from all over the world. The publisher, Judith Jones, who was Julia's champion, was an early visionary for the potential of cookbooks. And her storyline in the TV series is as important as Julia's because she changed the book industry. And Julia did open Americans' eyes and mouths to taste, to the joys of good food that has a different history. Today, in the melting pot that is the USA and Canada, you can find every kind of food imaginable. In fact, around the globe, we can eat so many different cuisines. How lucky are we? Julia Child made that happen. Now, do I recommend her book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking? No, not at all. It's big and cumbersome, it's awkward, and it's dated. We eat a more plant-based diet these days, and there are newer, more convenient, modern, and even tastier recipes available from chefs who benefited from Julia Child's legacy. The legacy I think she's owed, that of showing North Americans that French cuisine, and now so many other cuisines, are delicious, easy to make, and worthy of cooking and being shared and savored. Do I recommend the TV series Julia? Absolutely. I think it's a window into the past where women's lives were changing for the better, as was food. And so believe in your ability to read a recipe and make a delicious meal, share it with someone, and enjoy. Julia Child would end every episode of The French Chef this way, and so I'll borrow it here. Bon appétit. Thanks for listening to Here You Go. Transcripts are now included in my newsletter. The link is in the podcast description. Can you do me a favor? Can you please subscribe to the podcast and, better yet, leave a review? I would love it if you shared the podcast with your friends. Remember, you can contact me on Instagram and on my website. You can find this information in the program notes. Our theme music is by Amos the Transparent, and you can link to their music in the program notes as well. I hope you'll continue to join me. I look forward to hearing from you. Stay tuned for the next episode of Here You Go.